Purple. The highest peak of the ignorance of the living entities who are conditioned by material bodies is that they are unaware of the supreme cause of the cosmic manifestation. Different people have different theories regarding the supreme cause, but none of them are genuine. The only supreme cause is Vishnu, and the intervening impediment is the illusory energy of the Lord. The Lord has employed his wonderful material energy in manifesting many, many wonderful distractions in the material world, and the conditioned souls, illusioned by the same energy, are thus unable to know the supreme cause. The most stalwart scientists and philosophers therefore cannot be accepted as wonderful. They only appear wonderful because they are instruments in the hands of the illusory energy of the Lord. Under illusion, the general mass of people deny the existence of the Supreme Lord and accept the foolish products of illusory energy as supreme. One can know the supreme cause, the personality of Godhead, by the causeless mercy of the Lord, which is bestowed upon the Lord's pure devotees like Brahma and those in his disciplic succession. By acts of penance only was Lord Brahma able to see the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and by realization only could he understand the Lord as he is. Brahma was extremely satisfied upon observing the magnificent beauty and opulence of the Lord, and he admitted that nothing can be comparable to him. Only by penance can one appreciate the beauty and opulence of the Lord, and when one is acquainted with that beauty and opulence, he is no longer attracted by any other. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2:59. Param drishtva nivartate. Foolish human beings who do not endeavor to investigate the supreme beauty and opulence of the Lord are here condemned by Brahma. It is imperative that every human being try for such knowledge, and if anyone does not do so, his life is spoiled. Anything that is beautiful and opulent in the material sense is enjoyed by those living entities who are like crows. Crows always engage in picking at rejected garbage, whereas the white ducks do not mix with the crows. Rather, they take pleasure in transparent lakes with lotus flowers, surrounded by beautiful orchards. Both crows and ducks are undoubtedly birds by birth, but they are not of the same feather. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakya chakshurun militam yena tasme shri gurve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam tadati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vishnavamascha shri rupam sagrajatam sagana raghunatanvitam tam sajivam sadvetam savadutam parijana saitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padan sagana lalita shri vishakhanvitamascha He Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namne Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I pray I can speak something which is beneficial, purifying and chaste to the authentic literatures that Srila Prabhupada has given to us. So just to recap in terms of where we're at, since we've just started a new chapter also. So we're in the middle of a conversation between two personalities, Maitri Muni and Vidura. And Vidura was originally speaking to Uddhava, but then Uddhava had redirected him to Maitri Muni to hear more about the glories of the Lord. And some of the first questions that Vidura had asked Maitri is about understanding the cosmos in one sense. And so we heard a massive section on the Virat Rupa of the Lord. And then Vidura had additional questions related to the Lord, related to the creation, related to the living entities. And one of those questions also entailed Maitra asking about, Vidura asking about Lord Brahma and what inspired him to actually create and actually populate the world. And so Maitreya, being very chaste, being very authentic himself, he recited exactly what he heard from his guru in disciplic succession. And so we see that's kind of the parampara, the situation that we're all trying to endeavor and be in, where we're always being chaste to what the spiritual teachers and the acharyas have said. And some of the first things that Maitreya Muni explains to Vidura is about how Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is there and how Brahma comes from the lotus flower that stems from the navel. And then Brahma is baffled, he's confused, he's usually we go into a midlife crisis in our 30s, 40s or something like that. But Brahma had a birth crisis. He was thinking, who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose? Where did I come from? And so like this, he's looking around, he's looking up, down, left, right, center, he's trying to find, where did he come from? He goes down the lotus stem to try to find the source. He tries to go up, but he can't find anything. And then he's inspired to actually search inside him, go internal. When he couldn't find the answers outside, he went inside to find the answers. And there we see, after many, many years of penance, Lord Brahma is able to have darshan of the Lord in his heart. The Vishnu with lying on Anantashesh. And from there, he sees that from the navel, there's a lotus stem, and on top of that lotus stem is where Lord Brahma is present. And then the last verse of chapter 8, we see that Brahma starts to recite prayers. It's mentioned that he's going to start praying to that Lord Vishnu. And specifically, quotes, prayers on the path of creative mentality, which is where we start chapter 9. Start with prayers from Lord Brahma. I'll just read the translation again. Lord Brahma said, O my Lord, today, after many, many years of penance, I have come to know about you. Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. My Lord, you are the only knowable object because there is nothing supreme beyond you. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the absolute. You exist as the Supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. So you see, Brahma has just had darshan of the Lord, and he's starting to pray to the Lord. And we see the Srimad Bhagavatam is such a literature that actually in every canto, in every pastime, there are prayers to the Lord. Queen Kunti's prayers, Bhishma Dev's stutis, Gajendra's prayers, Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, throughout the Bhagavatam, it's just filled with prayers. And when you study these prayers, there's actually a very common theme in terms of the structure of the prayers. And one of those themes is that they all start with glorifying the Lord. Now, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when I come into the temple room and I take darshan of the deities, I can immediately go into, oh Krishna, this happened, that happened, I need this, I want this. But here from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that actually the way to pray to the Lord is to glorify the Lord first. And that's what we see Brahma doing here. We see Brahma is glorifying Krishna's supreme position as the creator, as the origin, as the supreme cause. In the Brahma Samhita, we hear how Brahma glorifies Krishna as Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Lord Brahma is glorifying Krishna as the supreme, as the supreme personality of Godhead, who has a transcendental body, but then also goes on to glorify him as the origin of everything, how there's no other origin beyond him, and how he's the prime cause of all causes. Because that is Krishna's position. And we also see in today's verse that Lord Brahma then also talks about, out of his compassion, he talks about the unfortunate position of the embodied living entities who are unable to know the personality, who are unable to know of God, Krishna. And we see that in the world today, there is a big push, especially many years ago, but even now, there's a big push for protecting the environment, for protecting Mother Earth. Most businesses, most companies nowadays, if you spoke to them, they'll have an environmental policy. You know, how are they protecting the environment? That becomes a big thing. And we understand why, because many personalities, even materialists, understand that it's because of this earth that we have the resources available to build, to engineer, to create. We understand that the earth is the reason, the cause for our sustenance, for the nutrition. Just like a mother takes care of the child, the earth takes care of us. And we know from Vedic literature, from our philosophers, that the earth is one of the seven mothers. But if there's a mother, then naturally the question is, there must be a father. And who is that father? We are so focused in terms of the world of protecting Mother Earth. But Mother Earth also means that there must be a father. And from the Vedic literature, from Bhagavad Gita, we understand that the seed-giving father is Krishna. We have the verse from Bhagavad Gita 14:4. Sarva yoneshu kaunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasham brahmai mahad yonir aham bija pradapita. Translation. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Unquote. So from the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that Krishna is the seed-giving father in our philosophy. And even in the Bhagavatam, we understand that it's described that just by Krishna's gaze over Prakriti, just by his glance over Prakriti, he impregnates the material creation to give birth to the living entities. But then if we go beyond the earth, then we see there's so many scientists with different theories about the creation of the universe. Big Bang theory, steady state theory, multiverse theory, so many theories exist. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about this also. He talks about how there's many different theories for creation, the supreme cause of existence. But what we see is that many of these theories, or practically most, or if not all of these theories, they try to explain the creation of the universe by taking God out of the equation. They try to explain that, okay, the Big Bang happened, this is how it happened, and there's no God. But we understand that from the Isha Upanishad, Srila Prabhupada in the introduction, in the first section, he talks about three ways to acquire knowledge. Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. Pratyaksha is acquiring knowledge through sense perception. You know, we've got these five senses, and it's about utilizing these senses to understand the world around us. With the eyes, I see certain things. With the nose, I smell certain things. But we understand that that can be quite misleading, because if we step out, I don't know if it's going to be possible today, but if we stood outside today and we looked up in the sky, we would see a very orange circle in the sky. And we think, okay, it's the size, you know, I could fit it in my hands. That must be something that gives us light that is the size of my finger. But then we understand that that's misleading, because we know the sun is very, very far away, and it's not just a circle, it's a sphere. But then that takes us to the next way to acquire knowledge, which is Anuman, which is inference. This idea of using our mind, our intelligence, to look at the world around us and to understand the world around us, and then infer things and even extrapolate things sometimes. And in that way, we try and understand what's going on, how things work, how things function. And a very classic example that I like to use is the atomic model. If you go back 200 years, the atoms that make up our, you know, all the living block, or the building blocks, there are different theories of how or what the atom looks like. 200 years ago, people thought it was just a sphere. A couple of hundred years ago, they thought it was a different model. Now they think it's a different model, a quantum model. And things constantly evolve because the instruments we have evolve, the understanding we get evolves, and ultimately then the inference we get out of these things also then evolves. And people think that this is very scientific. People think that this is progress. But what we understand is that actually this can also be misleading, because that inference is actually limited by our understanding. It's in one sense also then tainted or contaminated by our biases about life. And then, as we know, it can also build many, many doubts. It can also be prone to error. So many theories have been proven wrong. They thought they were true, but then something came out, and then we find out that actually, no, this theory doesn't hold the test of time. And so then that takes us to Shabda. Shabda is not just about hearing from sources, it's about hearing from authoritative sources. If you wanted to know what's on TV tonight, you're going to go to a TV guide. In the old days, it used to be a paper copy. Nowadays, it's an online copy. But you wouldn't challenge it. You wouldn't doubt it. You wouldn't go, oh, on BBC One, they're saying that news round is at, I don't know what time, 6 p.m. or whatever. You wouldn't doubt it because you're like, okay, this is an authoritative source that's telling me what's going to be on TV. In the same way, if you wanted to know what this class schedule is for the Bhaktivedanta Manor, you would look at the sheet outside, you would go to Manor Media, and you wouldn't doubt it. Sometimes it might be wrong, that's because it got input wrong or somebody changes on the schedule. But on the first basis, you wouldn't doubt it. You'd accept it as an authoritative source because they've put the schedule there. In the same way, if we want to acquire spiritual knowledge, if we want to acquire not even just spiritual knowledge, but if we want to understand the five basic topics of life, which we can easily get from the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, jiva, karma, prakriti, kala, and Ishvara. So the living entity, the activities, the material world, material creation, time, and God. Then we need to go to authoritative spiritual sources. Scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And if we're intelligent, we go to Shabda Brahman, we go to these authoritative sources for our understanding of the basic and the fundamental questions of life. Because there's no other authoritative source out there. We're very fortunate to have the Vedic literature that is completely authoritative, thanks to Srila Prabhupada. But many of us, myself included, often live on the mental platform. We want to figure things out. We want to know things. And just a shout out. I have been told once that I live too much in my head and not in my heart. And that means that I want to really try and understand things, really try and figure things out, use logic and reasoning to understand the world around me, understand what's going on in people's minds. And there's a place for that in our scriptures. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a verse. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Karaha Vichar Vichara Karita Chite Pabe Chamatkar. This is from C.C. Adilila, chapter 8, verse 15. Quote, if you are indeed interested in logic and argument, kindly apply it to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you do so, you will find it to be strikingly wonderful. Unquote. So we see that there's a place for logic and argument. And that place is not to take God out of the equation, but to keep God in the equation and understand life, understand material energy, and also the spiritual reality that's available to us. And when we look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially the first parts of the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, we see Mahaprabhu himself uses logic and reasoning and argument to defeat many, many philosophers, many, many great Vedantists, and defeat them to establish the elevated position of the practice of bhakti. And even in Prabhupada's life, we see that there's many cases where he talks about, and even there's many letters where he basically establishes that this Krishna consciousness movement is not based on blind faith. It's based on intelligence. It's based on intelligent inquiry. In one of the letters to Sri Guptaji in 1977, he says, quote, Krishna consciousness is not an ism or simply blind following, is based on authority, scientific, and logical. Unquote. Srila Prabhupada saying that this movement is not based on just blind faith. It's based on logic, reasoning, and science. And we see that we've got this book, The Science of Self-Realization. Why? Because Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Krishna consciousness as a spiritual science. And what does science really entail? It involves really three stages. One is you've got a hypothesis. Second is you've got an experiment. And then third is you've got a conclusion. And in Krishna consciousness, we have the same thing. At the very basis, we've got the hypothesis that we're all a spiritual soul who has an eternal relationship with Krishna. And that relationship with Krishna is beyond this world. What's the experiment? The practice of yoga, the practice of bhakti yoga specifically. And then as a conclusion? Back to Godhead. Okay, maybe that's not something we can necessarily conclude in this lifetime. But as a conclusion, we can see that, okay, once we put the experiment to practice, is our consciousness elevating beyond the three modes? Shishi Radha Gokulananda, Shishi Sitaran Lakshmanma, Shishi Gaur Nitayaki, Jai. The conclusion that we can see is that as we practice, as we practice the experiment, is our consciousness elevating beyond the modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness, and elevating beyond that to pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva, where the things of this world no longer affect us. Yeah, things go on. Yes, life always has issues. But actually, our consciousness is so much higher, or eventually so much higher, that actually the things around us don't affect us in the same way as they once used to. And so we can see that Krishna consciousness is indeed a spiritual science, because we have a hypothesis, we have an experiment, and the conclusion is attainable just in this life if we change the way we look at the conclusion. Yes, the ultimate conclusion is go back to Godhead, but how do we assess whether that is actually happening? We're not going to go die and come back to tell the tale. At least, I don't think I am. But we see that people of this world, instead of using their logic and argument to include God, include Krishna in the picture, they use their logic and argument to try and be happy in this world, to try and find ways to position themselves to just have experience that material happiness through the material modes. And Srila Prabhupada explains that actually, yes, there's so many successful personalities out there. We can see that so many people will attain or achieve Nobel Prizes and so many great best-selling books. But Srila Prabhupada talks about them as, in the purport, quote, "They only appear wonderful because they're instruments in the hands of the illusory energy of the Lord." Unquote. It says that actually they only appear wonderful because they're instruments in the hands of Maya. And not only that, he describes the illusory energy as, quote, "wonderful distractions in the material world." Unquote. Explains that actually things in the material world are just distraction. They're just wonderful distractions. And that's why these personalities appear so great, so successful. And let's be honest, most of us have first-hand experience of the distractions of the material world. We have our mobile phones, and on there we have so many social media apps, Instagram, Facebook, all these things. We have entertainment sites like Netflix and YouTube. And then even our own minds, procrastination, sense of perfectionism, and all these things, distracts us. They distract us from being absorbed in the spiritual reality. And if you want to be materially successful, these distractions become obstacles. What to speak of spiritual success? How much greater of a distraction they are. And sometimes, as sadhakas, we will go to these social media sites, we will go to these different places and say, "I'm doing this for service, I'm doing this for Krishna." Maybe we're putting an advert for School of Bhakti out there. Maybe we're doing videos for the Brahmacharini Ashram. And it's amazing, it's great. But then in the corner we see there's, oh my gosh, there's such a nice post here. Such a nice video. Let me click on it. Let me just, you know, one or two pictures. They're Krishna conscious too, you know? My friend's a devotee. They've put a Krishna conscious thing. One click goes to a next click. The next click goes into a swipe. The swipe then turns into more swipes. And before you know it, somehow or another, you've ended up spending half an hour on social media. Some of it is Krishna conscious, and then some of it, let's not even talk about it. Because that's what happens. Because these are distractions of the material energy. And these are provided by the Lord. These are provided by the Lord through material nature. And a very nice analogy or example that we can see is the Lord is like a mother. And material nature is like the maidservant or like a helper. And we are like the child. And a very personal example I use is my sister and my nephew. And then, you know, insert mother, as in my mother, or the son's grandmother, or somebody else here. What tends to happen is that the child is very safe, comfortable, feels protected, feels happy in the arms of the mother or around the mother. So they're just playing, they're just going about their own business, and the mother's right there, so they have no anxiety, nothing at all. But then at some point, the mother wants to go and, in the modern day, work. Not that there's anything wrong in that, by the way. But they want to go and work. So what do? They go, okay, here's my child, here's my baby. My mum or maidservant or babysitter, you look after her, him or her. What happens to the baby? They start crying nonstop. They start crying because they just want the mother. But then what does a babysitter do? They have a massive pile of toys. Takes one toy out and goes, shakes it, and like does all these sorts of weird and wonderful things in front of the baby. And the baby gets enamored by it, and it's like, oh, shiny, nice toy, noisy toy, okay. Like, and then they start playing with it. And so the baby's pacified. But then what happens after some time? The baby's bored of the toy and now is crying again because they want their mother. And the babysitter finds another toy, gives that toy. And like this, they go through cycles of different toys to pacify the baby, to pacify the child, because they're devoid of their mother. And our life is very much like that. We see that our constitutional position is Jivarasrupa Krishna Nityadas. Our constitutional position is to be an internal servant of Krishna, to live with Krishna. And I'm not going to go into the whole where did the jiva come from theories, but we come from Krishna. We are eternally happy with Krishna. By some reason or another, we come to the material world in the lapse of Maya, in the lapse of material energy. And in order to keep us here, Maya finds different distractions, different toys for us to play and be happy here. And so if we want to be happy without Krishna, then that's Maya's job. Maya's job is to facilitate all the different toys that we need and want to be happy here. When we're a baby, when we're a child, toy houses, toy cars, all these things, you know, in a small size, satisfy us. But as we grow older, we don't want toy houses, toy cars anymore. We want the real deal. We want the big houses, the big cars. And then even that's not enough. We're not satisfied with one. We want two, we want three, we want four. We want more and more and more. And that's basically us wanting more and more of the toys, forgetting that actually what we really want, what our soul really wants and needs, is just the relationship with Krishna. And that's actually what the material world is there for. The material world is an endless source of desires for us, because it's an endless source of distractions. If we think of how unlimited the spiritual world is, for all of that unlimitedness, there needs to be a distraction to keep us here. And so sometimes we may think, if we just get this desire fulfilled, I'll be happy, I'll be able to practice my Krishna consciousness. But Maya's got another 500 billion, trillion, quadrillion distractions ready, waiting for us. to be distracted by spiritual life again. The material world is perfectly designed to distract us from our spiritual goals, because more often than not, that's what we want. We want the shiny toys of the world instead of the eternal relationship with Krishna. And so we see that in the translation and even in the purport, we see that Brahma was empowered to see, to get darshan of Krishna and to serve Krishna through his acts of penance. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that, quote, by acts of penance only was Lord Brahma able to see the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and by realization only could he understand the Lord as he is, unquote. By practicing penance, by abstaining from material enjoyment, in one sense, Brahma attained darshan and realization of Krishna. Now, his penance is described as 100 Divya Yugas, 100 days of Brahma. And to put it in context, one day of Brahma is, I think, 4.3 billion, I think it is, years, earth years. Now, imagine what 100 years of Brahma is. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I know for a fact I'm not going to be living that long in this body. So what's my penance? I can't be performing that sort of penance. But Srila Prabhupada has given us that penance, which is the four regulative principles and minimum 16 rounds of chanting, at the bare basis. Because this sort of penance allows us, well, the four regulative principles are there to raise us from an animalistic lifestyle to a human lifestyle by keeping the foundations, keeping the pillars of Dharma intact. That's what those penances help us do. And then beyond that, the chanting of 16 rounds, minimum 16 rounds, helps absorb at least some of our time in the day in the transcendental reality. But merely abstinence is not enough. We know just by, if an alcoholic just tried to take himself away from alcohol, that's not enough. At some point, they start having cravings, or I forgot the word, rehabs, yes, relapses. They have relapses and go back to wanting to drink alcohol and re-engage in that. And so for that, we need to also develop higher taste. Higher taste means abstaining from the lower tastes, but also attaching ourselves to the higher taste. And Krishna helps us in that, because in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 10, Krishna says, Desham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yanamam upayantite. He says that, quote, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me, unquote. So Krishna says that for those who are constantly engaged in trying to learn about, hear about, know about Krishna, Krishna himself is ready to help us elevate our taste from the lower taste to the higher taste to such a degree that they can come to me, that we can actually go back to Krishna and not be absorbed, not engage ourselves in the lower tastes and the world around us. So, conscious of time, I will summarize there. So we started off talking about how Lord Brahma starts off his prayers to Krishna through glorifying the Lord, talking about his supreme position. And in that glorification, he also brings out his compassionate nature and starts concerning himself with the position of the living entities who may never understand, or who till date have not understood the position of the Lord. And all of that is because of the distractions that the Lord has put in place in the form of Maya to keep us engaged in the material world, because that's what the living entities desire, the conditioning living entities want. And we spoke about how these distractions are like toys. They're like toys which keep us from our eternal relationship with Krishna. But the difference is that the baby wants the mother and recognizes they want the mother, but they get so absorbed in the toys of the world that they forget that actually what they really wanted is the mother. And the the path to enlightenment, the path to realizing Krishna, is to realize that all these toys aren't really what we're after. Yes, the toys are there, we play with them, but in the association of our mother, association of Krishna. And then also this idea that we should develop higher taste, take ourselves away from the lower tastes and attach ourselves to the highest tastes of devotional service. So I'll end there, conscious of the time. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any comments, questions, corrections, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, I have two questions. First question, like the penance of Brahma, it has been said that he performed penance and austerities for 100 years. But is this actually the Divya 100 years of his own life? Because Brahma, the whole total age of Brahma is 100 years. So if he performed penances for 100 years, then how did he survive to take darshan of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu? And in the prayers, he mentioned the unfortunate embedded living entities. So unless and until he got the darshan of Lord Vishnu, he didn't start creation. So to whom he is talking about?
So so in terms of the first one, in terms of the 100 yugas, so in translation, the purpose of chapter 8, it's actually mentioned 100 divya yugas. So I appreciate obviously the point of Brahma's yugas, but divya yugas, from my understanding, are the years of the demigods, not necessarily Brahma's. So I don't know, so there is a difference in that sense. And some of the second, in terms of the creation, so this is why it's such an amazing and mind-boggling thing in terms of the creation, understanding creation. When you go through the Bhagavatam, we see that there's personalities even before Brahma. And then there's Brahma who does all the creation. In terms of explaining that, I'm not the best person. But what my understanding also is, and this is aligned also with the scriptures to some degree, and probably doesn't answer the question directly, is that we understand that there's creation even before Brahma, because there's multiple creations. There's creation, then there's annihilation, there's creation again. And Brahma is a personality that has the consciousness, the recollection to some degree, that there's actually more beyond him. And so to that sense, we can understand that Brahma recognizes that there's living entities who are conditioned, because he himself, to some degree, is also conditioned. He's of course also a pure devotee, but yes. Yes, bro.
One was a reflection, one was a question. The reflection was, you were saying that the child is distracted by the toys. So it reminds me, the scientists did a test. They put a baby monkey in a cage, separated it from its mother, and they put a silhouette of its mother in the cage with spikes coming out of it. So the baby monkey would go over and embrace it. It would be very painful, and then it would reject it. So in the same way, we're in the material world trying to embrace a silhouette of Krishna, and it causes us pain. So we, eventually the monkeys, the little baby monkeys, actually go insane. It was just a test to see how long it took, you know. So it just reminded me of that. The question is, when you say it is, we have to apply logic, when normally when we're talking about logic and scientific analysis, God's not in the picture, so we have to do it with God in the picture. But by the very nature of God is that he isn't logical, and he does confound our ability, aksaja, adho, he's beyond aksaja. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that the way to understand him is to be situated in the eternal present, because in the eternal present you just accept everything as it is. So in that sense, is that, would that be logic applied, or is that something else?
That's an interesting question. That's a really nice share and thought, actually. I guess the first kind of thing that came to my mind is, what does it mean to apply logic in spiritual science? In one sense, we understand that on a material science perspective, technical, but we have axioms, we have certain truths that we accept as truths and then build on top of that. So the axiom, the eternal truth that we accept from a spiritual science perspective, is the scriptures that we've got. We accept those as the basis, as the foundations to build our logic on. And then the second part that came to my mind is seeing the hand of God in everything, Because when we're, as Bhikkhunath Thakur was saying, if we're eternally present in that spiritual reality, then whatever's happening in our life, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's positive, negative, whether it's whatever it is, we're seeing Krishna's influence and Krishna's hand behind everything. And therefore we're applying our logic, our reasoning, our argument, not in trying to go to the root cause of that thing and who did what, but trying to go, okay, this has happened in my life. What's Krishna trying to teach me? And trying to find the understanding there. So that's kind of what came to my mind in that.
Yeah, it reminds me, Kadama Kanda Maharaj was asked, have you seen God? And he thought for a minute. It's one of those questions you can't say yes or no to. So he thought for a minute, he says, well, I haven't seen his face, but I've seen his hand many times.
Thank you. Any thoughts, questions? Bishop Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the really incredible class. Thank you. You're talking about distractions, how we get distracted. How can we prevent being distracted?
Position ourselves in the eternal reality. I guess one thing that I was thinking of when I was thinking about distractions, and this is kind of related, but also not related, kind of, is going back to His Holiness Kanda Gona Maharaj. He'd once in his class mentioned how, about the Ramayana series in the 1990s, I think it is, how in India, everybody, every village ended up getting a television because of Ramayana. And Ramayana is such a spiritual, we know it's a literature and then it's presented. And out of all, I mean, I haven't seen all of the movies or the series and stuff, but the ones from the 1990s, Mahabharata Ramayana, seem the most authentic. I'm not saying they're fully authentic, but they seem the most authentic. And then what Kanda Gona Maharaj was mentioning is that actually that was Maya's trick to invite the television into our life. Because what happened after that is that Ramayana finishes and now people are now watching all these different soaps and operas and whatever else is on TV. So even our mobile phones, even the apps that we have, Instagram, Facebook, etc., we see we're getting them because it's for Krishna. But then sometimes Krishna goes into the backside and we end up using it for all these other things in our life. So I think the way, or at least one way to avoid the distraction is to abstain from the source of the distraction in the first place. That's one very simple, easy way. You see, Gauranga Prabhu, he has a phone where we have a smartphone that has many, many apps. He has one of those simple old phones because all he needs a phone for is to call to message people. But we want these smartphones because we want to do WhatsApp, we want to do Instagram, we want to do Facebook, we want to do YouTube, all these other things. But then that's inviting the distractions in our life. So we can simplify so that we can obviously not have the distractions readily available. But sometimes it's also not practical to avoid distractions altogether. So there I think it becomes this point of being conscious before being Krishna conscious. Be conscious of what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, and how much we're engaging in these different energies. If we're conscious of our time on the phone, when we're going to the phone because we need to put a social post out or something like that, we go there for that purpose, done, out. We don't then go, oh, but there's this nice thing here, there's that thing nice thing there, there's that thing here. They may look Krishna conscious, but that one thing then leads to another, leads to a third, leads to a fourth, and then before we know it, we're absorbed in the distractions. And so those are two things that come to mind. One is keep them far away, or the other thing is keep them so close that we're always conscious of those distractions. Because as soon as we become a bit relaxed, we let that go into the subconscious, that, oh yeah, these are distractions. But it's okay because I'm doing it for service. As soon as we start reasoning and justifying it that way, we become absorbed in the distractions before we know it. So keep them very far or keep them so close that we're always pinched by the fact that we're absorbed or using those distractions. I don't know if anybody else has thoughts because I think it's reality.
It's also a question of training. And I can't remember which scripture it was, but I read that if you can focus on Krishna for 12 seconds, that's called dharana.
Wow.
And then if you can focus on Krishna for 12 times, 12 seconds, 144 seconds, that's called dhyana. And if you can focus on 12 times 144 seconds, that's called samadhi. So you've got different levels of absorption. So if you can just do it for 12 seconds, you'll go into a different realm. And then if you can manage 12 times that, and then so by the training, you get to the point where you can focus the mind, and then you can penetrate through into these higher levels of consciousness.
That's very nice. It'll be interesting to know where this horse is, if you're able to.
Yeah, I'll find out.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? No? Srimad Bhagavatam ki? Yeah. Shri Prabhupada ki?